Chapter 16. Two Paths. Introduction. In this most unusual chapter, the Gita departs from a lofty view of human nature and describes two opposing forces. The higher tendency, the divine, leads to increasing happiness in the course of the soul's evolution, and eventually to its liberation. But there is also a downward current, leading to suffering and enslavement of the spirit. This chapter is unusual in giving equal, if not in fact more, attention to this dark side of human nature. Here we get a detailed description of the divine qualities that liberate and the demonic qualities that enslave. Chapter 16, verse 5. In a rare somber tone, Krishna describes the sinful person, the individual of a demonic kind, and it seems he knows what he's talking about. But first he assures Arjuna that he is of the divine type, so he shouldn't be alarmed. The demonic personality is basically atheistic. For such people, life does not originate in God or a divine reality, but is grounded in biology, in sexual desire. Taking a low view of human nature, such people cause suffering to themselves as well as others. They are arrogant and have many insatiable selfish desires, and they do not hesitate to do anything that will get them what they want. Krishna grants that they may attain their desires, enjoying wealth and power, but their destination is hell, a hell of their own making, often in this very life, as their karma bears fruit. One of the least likable characteristics of demonic personalities is their sense of self-importance. They like to give gifts ostentatiously and offer ritual sacrifices. This legitimizes their wealth and makes them feel respectable and esteemed. They like being generous if it will make them look good. Krishna does not disguise his aversion to cruel people. He tells Arjuna that he arranges for them to be born again and again in a harsh world. Such souls cannot seem to purify their sinful hearts, repeating the same selfish ways they sink lower and lower. This is a bleak picture which the Gita dwells on only in this chapter. But even here, amidst the gloom, Krishna will not say that such a soul is eternally damned. It may be that such a sinful creature is condemned to birth after birth in harsh, unfavorable circumstances, sinking into more and more hellish states of mind. But the cycle goes on. The choice to change direction is always open, and the Atman itself can never be stained. Lust, anger, and greed are the three doors to hell that Arjuna must at all costs not enter. The person who enters will not only fail to reach life's final goal, but will not achieve any measure of lasting happiness and prosperity. In Sanskrit, this chapter is called The Way of Divine and Demonic Destinies. The words deva, God, and asura, demon, are not to be taken too literally here. The Hindu scriptures often tell stories of the battles between the gods and the demons. Thus they dramatize the struggle between good and evil in the world. No divine character from Hindu myth escapes a challenge from some demon. Usually the god or goddess is victorious, but often the demon will win a battle or two, though not the final victory. Krishna has a long battle record, celebrated by epithets like Madhusudana, slayer of the demon Madhu. Rama, another incarnation of Vishnu, had to confront and kill Ravana. The stories go on. The gods never seem to rest for long. There is always a new challenge to their authority, a new source of malignant evil to be destroyed. The Mahabharata and the Gita do not dwell on these mythical battles. Here the interest is more frankly human, and when Krishna discusses the divine and demonic qualities, he speaks not of gods and demons, but of human good and evil. Chapter 16. Two Paths. Krishna. Be fearless and pure. Never waver in your determination or your dedication to the spiritual life. Give freely. Be self-controlled, sincere, truthful, loving, and full of the desire to serve. Realize the truth of the scriptures. Learn to be detached and to take joy in renunciation. Do not get angry or harm any living creature, but be compassionate and gentle. Show goodwill to all. Cultivate vigor, patience, will, purity. Avoid malice and pride. Then, Arjuna, you will achieve your divine destiny. Other qualities, Arjuna, make a person more and more inhuman. Hypocrisy, arrogance, conceit, anger, cruelty, ignorance. The divine qualities lead to freedom, the demonic to bondage. But do not grieve, Arjuna. You were born with divine attributes. Some people have divine tendencies, others demonic. I have described the divine at length, Arjuna. Now listen while I describe the demonic. The demonic do things they should avoid, and avoid the things they should do. They have no sense of uprightness, purity, or truth. There is no God, they say. No truth, no spiritual law, no moral order. The basis of life is sex. What else can it be? Holding such distorted views, possessing scant discrimination, they become enemies of the world, causing suffering and destruction. Hypocritical, proud, and arrogant, living in delusion and clinging to deluded ideas, insatiable in their desires, they pursue their unclean ends. Although burdened with fears that end only with death, they still maintain with complete assurance gratification of lust is the highest that life can offer. Bound on all sides by scheming and anxiety, driven by anger and greed, they amass by any means they can a hoard of money for the satisfaction of their cravings. I got this today, they say. Tomorrow I shall get that. This wealth is mine, and that will be mine too. I have destroyed my enemies. I shall destroy others too. Am I not like God? I enjoy what I want. I am successful. I am powerful. I am happy. I am rich and well-born. Who is equal to me? I will perform sacrifices and give gifts and rejoice in my own generosity. This is how they go on, deluded by ignorance. Bound by their greed and entangled in a web of delusion, whirled about by a fragmented mind, they fall into a dark hell. Self-important, obstinate, swept away by the pride of wealth, they ostentatiously perform sacrifices without any regard for their purpose. Egotistical, violent, arrogant, lustful, angry, envious of everyone, they abuse my presence within their own bodies and in the bodies of others. Life after life, I cast those who are malicious, hateful, cruel, and degraded into the wombs of those with similar demonic natures. Birth after birth, they find themselves with demonic tendencies. Degraded in this way, Arjuna, they fail to reach me and fall lower still. There are three gates to this self-destructive hell: lust, anger, and greed. Renounce these three. Those who escape from these three gates of darkness, Arjuna, seek what is best and attain life's supreme goal. Others disregard the teachings of the scriptures. Driven by selfish desire, they miss the goal of life, miss even happiness and success. Therefore, let the scriptures be your guide in what to do and what not to do. Understand their teachings, then act in accordance with them. Chapter 17. The Power of Faith. Introduction. At the end of the last chapter, Krishna told Arjuna to look to the scriptures to guide his actions, so that he can avoid the lower road that leads backwards to a less evolved state. Now Arjuna wants to know about those who do not follow the orthodox way set down in the scriptures, but who nevertheless offer some kind of worship with faith in their hearts. In reply, Krishna goes into greater detail about the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. He also stresses the importance of shraddha, or faith. This is a difficult word. Faith is not an adequate translation, and the etymology of the word is obscure. It probably has an underlying meaning of what is held in the heart. We might say that our shraddha is the sum total of our values, what we really hold to be important in our lives. Every human being, Krishna says, is shraddha maya, made up of faith. As the Bible puts it, as we think in our heart, so we are. Here, as elsewhere in the Gita, shraddha is a positive quality. It is good to have faith. Yet faith can be of different kinds, different qualities. Sattvic faith is the most evolved, the most pure. Rajasic faith is dynamic, evolving, yet tainted with selfish motives. Tamasic faith goes astray in a spiritual desert. To illustrate this, Krishna tells Arjuna that sattvic people worship the devas, the gods of heaven, of light. The rajasic worship yakshas and rakshasas. The yakshas are servants of the god of wealth. Rakshasas are powerful, fearsome spirits, driven by the lust for power and pleasure. Finally, tamasic people worship the spirits of the dead and ghosts. In a practical digression, Krishna describes the different kinds of food liked by the sattvic, the rajasic, and the tamasic. Then he applies the three gunas to the act of worship and sacrifice, or selfless service, yajna. Verses 14 to 16 turn to the important question of tapas, or sadhana, the disciplines undergone for the sake of spiritual growth. The Gita holds that no lasting progress is possible on the spiritual path without self-discipline. The root of the word tapas is tap, to be hot, or to suffer pain. And in fact, tapas can also mean heat or suffering. When certain spiritual practices are mastered, they create a feeling of heat in the body, which is a sign of increased spiritual potency. Tapas also refers to the power gained through spiritual austerity. Krishna dispels the mistaken belief that tapas means mortifying or torturing the body, and points out that spiritual disciplines can be sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. The sattvic kind of tapas is offered for a truly spiritual goal. Rajasic tapas is performed to gain a selfish end, probably the admiration of others. Deluded by tamas, a person will undergo painful, foolish practices to try to gain power over or even to injure others. Changing course for a moment, Krishna discusses the mantram, Om Tat Sat. Om is the most ancient of Hindu mantrams. It is the sacred syllable that is Brahman, the cosmic sound heard in the depths of meditation. Tat is that, the supreme reality beyond what language can describe or thought can think. And Sat means both that which is and that which is good. The mantram Om Tat Sat affirms that only the good really exists. The opposite word, Asat, implies that evil is transient and therefore is not ultimately real. The last verse concludes that no act or intention can add to spiritual growth if it is faithless. An act done without shraddha is asat, unreal. It cannot have meaning either in this world or the next. Chapter 17. The Power of Faith. Arjuna. O Krishna, What is the state of those who disregard the scriptures but still worship with faith? Do they act from sattva, rajas, or tamas? Krishna. Every creature is born with faith of some kind, either sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. Listen, and I will describe each to you. Our faith conforms to our nature, Arjuna. Human nature is made of faith. A person is what his shraddha is. Those who are sattvic worship the forms of God. Those who are rajasic worship power and wealth. Those who are tamasic worship spirits and ghosts. Some invent harsh penances. Motivated by hypocrisy and egotism, they torture their innocent bodies and me who dwells within. Blinded by their strength and passion, they act and think like demons. The three kinds of faith express themselves in the habits of those who hold them, in the food they like, the work they do, the disciplines they practice, the gifts they give. Listen, and I will describe their different ways. Sattvic people enjoy food that is mild, tasty, substantial, agreeable, and nourishing. Food that promotes health, strength, cheerfulness, and longevity. Rajasic people like food that is salty or bitter, hot, sour, or spicy. Food that promotes pain, discomfort, and disease. Tamasic people like overcooked, stale, leftover, and impure food. Food that has lost its taste and nutritional value. The sattvic perform sacrifices with their entire mind fixed on the purpose of the sacrifice. Without thought of reward, they follow the teachings of the scriptures. The rajasic perform sacrifices for the sake of show and the good it will bring them. The tamasic perform sacrifices ignoring both the letter and the spirit. They omit the proper prayers, the proper offerings, the proper food, and the proper faith. To offer service to the gods, to the good, to the wise, and to your spiritual teacher, purity, honesty, continence, and non-violence. These are the disciplines of the body. To offer soothing words, to speak truly, kindly, and helpfully, and to study the scriptures. These are the disciplines of speech. Calmness, gentleness, silence, self-restraint, and purity. These are the disciplines of the mind. When these three levels of self-discipline are practiced without attachment to the results, but in a spirit of great faith, the sages call this practice sattvic. Disciplines practiced in order to gain respect, honor, or admiration are rajasic. They are undependable and transitory in their effects. Disciplines practiced to gain power over others, or in the confused belief that to torture oneself is spiritual, are tamasic. Giving simply because it is right to give, without thought of return, at a proper time, in proper circumstances, and to a worthy person, is sattvic giving. Giving with regrets or in the expectation of receiving some favor or of getting something in return is rajasic. Giving at an inappropriate time, in inappropriate circumstances, and to an unworthy person without affection or respect is tamasic. Om, Tat, Sat. These three words represent Brahman, from which come priests and scriptures and sacrifice. Those who follow the Vedas, therefore, always repeat the word Om when offering sacrifices, performing spiritual disciplines, or giving gifts. Those seeking liberation and not any personal benefit add the word Tat when performing these acts of worship, discipline, and charity. Sat means that which is. It also indicates goodness. Therefore, it is used to describe a worthy deed. to be steadfast in self-sacrifice, self-discipline, and giving is sat. To act in accordance with these three is sat as well. But to engage in sacrifice, self-discipline, and giving without good faith is asat. Without worth or goodness, either in this life or in the next. Chapter 18. Freedom and Renunciation. Introduction. This final chapter of the Gita roams over many subjects, beginning with a discussion of the merits of renunciation versus the life of personally involved action. To begin with, Arjuna asks about two words commonly used for renunciation in Sanskrit, sannyasa and tyaga. Both words come from roots meaning to give up or abandon. Sannyasa acquired the specialized meaning of giving up ordinary life, to live the austere, wandering life of a homeless pilgrim. A sannyasi is a monk, one who does not participate in family life and has withdrawn from society. Krishna does not recommend this kind of renunciation. In fact, he says it is impossible for anyone to give up in this way. For as long as we have a body, we have to do a certain amount of work just to maintain it. Krishna does not advise dropping out of life, and the Gita is primarily aimed at people who live in the world, yet desire genuine spiritual fulfillment. The kind of renunciation Krishna recommends is tyaga, where it is not activity, but selfish desire for the rewards of action, of work, of life, that is to be renounced. Arjuna is advised to fulfill all his responsibilities, but without a selfish motive. In particular, he should not give up the three great virtuous works, sacrifice, giving, and spiritual disciplines. Having made plain to Arjuna that renunciation is essential, Krishna goes on to explain that renunciation can be of three kinds, depending upon the guna that dominates the individual's personality. As may be expected, rajasic and tamasic renunciation leave something to be desired. Many times Krishna has said that renunciation of the fruits of work is essential. Perhaps the verse in chapter 2 said it best, that we have control over our work and actions, but we have no command of the results. The word karma phala tyaga appears again and again, and the literal translation is renunciation of the fruits of action. In this final chapter, literally, the freedom, moksha, that comes from renunciation, Krishna sums up his teaching that in work, in life, one must not be driven by a selfish desire for any kind of reward, for such compulsive work can only stunt full spiritual development. In addition, Krishna points out, when we act out of selfish attachment, we must fully partake of the result, the karma of every thought, word, and deed. And although these results may be what was desired, they may also be something not desired at all, or a little of both. Chapter 18, verse 12. In this life we can never be sure that things will turn out as planned. In verse 13, the Sankhya philosophy is again mentioned. Scholars believe that at the time the Gita was composed, the Sankhya school was at an early stage of development. Yet even here, we see the characteristic method of thorough categorization. Using the Sankhya category of the three gunas, the Gita goes on to give more detail about work, which is of three kinds: sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. Similarly, the doer of the work is shown to be dominated by one of these all-pervasive qualities. In a very interesting passage, Krishna talks of three kinds of happiness, a practical application of the abstract theories of Sankhya, chapter 18, verses 36 to 39. Pursuing the world of work and how it contributes to spiritual growth, the Gita gives a short explanation of caste in this chapter. The Gita is not especially interested in caste, the social hierarchy of Hindu society, but we do find a short explanation here. The sannyasi, the renouncing monk, has left society and therefore belongs to no caste. but Krishna does not point out that course to Arjuna. Rather, he wants Arjuna to lead an active life. Krishna tells him that devotion to his own duty is best. It is better to do one's own work, even if imperfectly, than to try to take on some other work. The work proper to each of the four castes is then described. In general, the Gita takes a liberal view of caste, and it would be wrong to interpret this chapter as supporting a rigid caste system. The final part of this chapter, verses 50 and following, give a picture of the person who has attained siddhi, success or perfection in the spiritual life, and who goes on to union with Brahman. In verse 61, Krishna returns to a favorite topic, the Lord dwelling in the hearts of all beings. But here he adds a startling revelation. The Lord dwells in all, yet he whirls them around through Maya as if they were toys mounted on a machine. Having jarred Arjuna with this amazing image, Krishna reassures him that he can escape from the machine, the wheel of time, through devotion to God. If he wholeheartedly takes refuge in the Lord within, then through Krishna's grace, he will find peace. As his all but final word, Krishna reminds Arjuna that he holds him very dear. Through devotion, Arjuna will be able to find his way, and he should not forget that Krishna feels deep love for him. The relationship between the teacher and student is given a parting word, partially of warning. Krishna does not want these profound truths told to anyone who is not ready. Anyone lacking devotion or self-control, who does not want to hear spiritual instruction or who scoffs at it, should not be accepted as a student. The sacred act of giving spiritual instruction cannot be undertaken lightly. It is the highest work, and the man or woman who does it is most dear to Krishna. Finally, Krishna asks Arjuna if he has understood. Arjuna says yes. His conflicts are over. He is ready to follow Krishna's instructions. This concludes the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna and the instruction of the Gita proper. Sanjaya, who has been narrating the poem to blind King Dhritarashtra, adds a few final verses of benediction. He has seen this dialogue through his mystic vision, granted by the grace of Vyasa. Just recalling this wonderful conversation makes his hair stand on end in ecstasy, and when he remembers Krishna's wonderful beauty, his joy is boundless. Chapter 18. Freedom and Renunciation. Arjuna. O Krishna, destroyer of evil, please explain to me sannyasa and tyaga, and how one kind of renunciation differs from another. Krishna. To refrain from selfish acts is one kind of renunciation, called sannyasa. To renounce the fruit of action is another, called tyaga. Among the wise, some say that all action should be renounced as evil. Others say that certain kinds of action, self-sacrifice, giving, and self-discipline, should be continued. Listen, Arjuna, and I will explain three kinds of tyaga and my conclusions concerning them. Self-sacrifice, giving, and self-discipline should not be renounced, for they purify the thoughtful. Yet even these, Arjuna, should be performed without desire for selfish rewards. This is essential. To renounce one's responsibilities is not fitting. The wise call such deluded renunciation tamasic. To avoid action from fear of difficulty or physical discomfort is rajasic. There is no reward in such renunciation. But to fulfill your responsibilities, knowing that they are obligatory while at the same time desiring nothing for yourself. This is sattvic renunciation. Those endowed with sattva clearly understand the meaning of renunciation and do not waver. They are not intimidated by unpleasant work, nor do they seek a job because it is pleasant. As long as one has a body, one cannot renounce action altogether. True renunciation is giving up all desire for personal reward. Those who are attached to personal reward will reap the consequences of their actions, some pleasant, some unpleasant, some mixed. But those who renounce every desire for personal reward go beyond the reach of karma. Listen, Arjuna, and I will explain the five elements necessary for the accomplishment of every action as taught by the wisdom of Sankhya: the body, the means, the ego, the performance of the act, and the divine will. These are the five factors in all actions, right or wrong, in thought, word, or deed. Those who do not understand this think of themselves as separate agents. With their crude intellects, they fail to see the truth. The person who is free from ego, who has attained purity of heart, though he slays these people, he does not slay and is not bound by his action. Knowledge, the thing to be known, and the knower, these three promote action. The means, the act itself, and the doer, these three are the totality of action. Knowledge, action, and the doer can be described according to the gunas. Listen, and I will explain their distinctions to you. Sattvic knowledge sees the one indestructible being in all beings, the unity underlying the multiplicity of creation. Rajasic knowledge sees all things and all creatures as separate and distinct. Tamasic knowledge, lacking any sense of perspective, sees one small part and mistakes it for the whole. Work performed to fulfill one's obligations, without thought of personal reward or of whether the job is pleasant or unpleasant, is sattvic. Work prompted by selfish desire or self-will, full of stress, is rajasic. Work that is undertaken blindly, without any consideration of consequences, waste, injury to others, or one's own capacities, is tamasic. Sattvic workers are free from egotism and selfish attachments, full of enthusiasm and fortitude in success and failure alike. Rajasic workers have strong personal desires and crave rewards for their actions. Covetous, impure, and destructive, they are easily swept away by fortune, good or bad. Tamasic workers are undisciplined, vulgar, stubborn, deceitful, dishonest, and lazy. They are easily depressed and prone to procrastination. Listen, Arjuna, as I describe the three types of understanding and will. To know when to act and when to refrain from action, what is right action and what is wrong, what brings security and what insecurity, what brings freedom and what bondage, these are the signs of a sattvic intellect. The rajasic intellect confuses right and wrong actions and cannot distinguish what is to be done from what should not be done. The tamasic intellect is shrouded in darkness, utterly reversing right and wrong wherever it turns. The sattvic will, developed through meditation, keeps prana, mind, and senses in vital harmony. The rajasic will, conditioned by selfish desire, pursues wealth, pleasure, and respectability. The tamasic will shows itself in obstinate ignorance, sloth, fear, grief, depression, and conceit. Now listen, Arjuna. There are also three kinds of happiness. By sustained effort, one comes to the end of sorrow. That which seems like poison at first, but tastes like nectar in the end. This is the joy of sattva, born of a mind at peace with itself. Pleasure from the senses seems like nectar at first, but it is bitter as poison in the end. This is the kind of happiness that comes to the rajasic. Those who are tamasic draw their pleasures from sleep, indolence, and intoxication. Both in the beginning and in the end, this happiness is a delusion. No creature, whether born on earth or among the gods in heaven, is free from the conditioning of the three gunas. The different responsibilities found in the social order, distinguishing Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, have their roots in this conditioning. The responsibilities to which Brahmins are born, based on their nature, are self-control, tranquility, purity of heart, patience, humility, learning, austerity, wisdom, and faith. The qualities of Kshatriyas, based on their nature, are courage, strength, fortitude, dexterity, generosity, leadership, and the firm resolve never to retreat from battle. The occupations suitable for Vaishya are agriculture, dairying, and trade. The proper work of a Shudra is service. By devotion to one's own particular duty, everyone can attain perfection. Let me tell you how. By performing one's own work, one worships the Creator who dwells in every creature. Such worship brings that person to fulfillment. It is better to perform one's own duties imperfectly than to master the duties of another. By fulfilling the obligations he is born with, a person never comes to grief. No one should abandon duties because he sees defects in them. Every action, every activity is surrounded by defects, as a fire is surrounded by smoke. One who is free from selfish attachments, who has mastered himself and his passions, attains the supreme perfection of freedom from action. Listen, and I shall explain now, Arjuna, how one who has attained perfection also attains Brahman, the supreme consummation of wisdom. Unerring in discrimination, sovereign of the senses and passions, free from the clamour of likes and dislikes, such a one leads a simple, self-reliant life based on meditation, controlling speech, body, and mind, free from self-will, aggressiveness, arrogance, anger, and the lust to possess people or things. They are at peace with themselves and others and enter into the unitive state. United with Brahman, ever joyful, beyond the reach of desire and sorrow, they have equal regard for every living creature and attain supreme devotion to me. By loving me, they come to know me truly. Then they know my glory and enter into my boundless being. All their acts are performed in my service, and through my grace, they win eternal life. Make every act an offering to me. Regard me as your only protector. Relying on interior discipline, meditate on me always. Remembering me, you shall overcome all difficulties through my grace. But if you will not heed me in your self-will, nothing will avail you. If you egotistically say, "I will not fight this battle," your resolve will be useless. Your own nature will drive you into it. Your own karma, born of your own nature, will drive you to do even that which you do not wish to do because of your delusion. The Lord dwells in the hearts of all creatures, and whirls them around upon the wheel of Maya. Run to him for refuge with all your strength, and peace profound will be yours through his grace. I give you these precious words of wisdom. Reflect on them, and then do as you choose. These are the last words I shall speak to you, dear one, for your spiritual fulfillment. You are very dear to me. Be aware of me always. Adore me. Make every act an offering to me, and you shall come to me. This I promise, for you are dear to me. Abandon all supports, and look to me for protection. I shall purify you from the sins of the past. Do not grieve. Do not share this wisdom with anyone who lacks in devotion or self-control, lacks the desire to learn, or scoffs at me. Those who teach this supreme mystery of the Gita to all who love me perform the greatest act of love. They will come to me without doubt. No one can render me more devoted service. No one on earth can be more dear to me. Those who meditate on these holy words worship me with wisdom and devotion. Even those who listen to them with faith, free from doubts, will find a happier world where good people dwell. Have you listened with attention? Are you now free from your doubts and confusion? Arjuna, you have dispelled my doubts and delusions, and I understand through your grace. My faith is firm now, and I will do your will. Sanjaya, this is the dialogue I heard between Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and Arjuna, the great-hearted son of Pritha. The wonder of it makes my hair stand on end. Through Vyasa's grace, I have heard the supreme secret of spiritual union directly from the Lord of Yoga, Krishna himself. Whenever I remember these wonderful holy words between Krishna and Arjuna, I am filled with joy. And when I remember the breathtaking form of Krishna, I am filled with wonder, and my joy overflows. Wherever the divine Krishna and the mighty Arjuna are, there will be prosperity, victory, happiness, and sound judgment. Of this, I am sure.
You have been listening to The Bhagavad Gita, introduced and translated by Eknath Ishwar, read by Paul Baisley. This audio recording is the copyright of the Blue Mountain Center of Meditation, a non-profit organization founded by Eknath Ishwaran in 1961. For more information, please visit our website, www.ishwaran.org. That's www.easwaran.org. The Bhagavad Gita, introduced and translated by Eknath Ishwaran, read by Paul Baisley. Chapter 1. The War Within. Dhritarashtra.
O Sanjaya, tell me what happened at Kurukshetra, the field of Dharma, where my family and the Pandavas gathered to fight.
Sanjaya. Having surveyed the forces of the Pandavas arrayed for battle, Prince Duryodhana approached his teacher, Drona, and spoke.
O my teacher, look at this mighty army of the Pandavas,
assembled by your own gifted disciple Yudhishthira. There are heroic warriors and great archers who are the equals of Bhima and Arjuna, Yayudhana, Virata, the mighty Drupada, Drishtaketu, Chekitana, the valiant king of Kashi, Purujit, Kuntiboja, the great leader Shaibya, the powerful Yudhamanyu, the valiant Uttamojas, and the son of Subhadra, in addition to the sons of Draupadi. All these command mighty chariots. O best of Brahmins, listen to the names of those who are distinguished among our own forces. Bhishma, Karna, and the victorious Kripa. Ashvatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Sumadatta. There are many others too, heroes giving up their lives for my sake, all proficient in war and armed with a variety of weapons. Our army is unlimited and commanded by Bhishma. Theirs is small and commanded by Bhima. Let everyone take his proper place and stand firm supporting Bhishma. Then the powerful Bhishma, the grandsire, oldest of all the Kurus, in order to cheer Duryodhana, roared like a lion and blew his conch horn. And after Bhishma, a tremendous noise arose of conches and cow horns and pounding on drums. Then Sri Krishna and Arjuna, who were standing in a mighty chariot yoked with white horses, blew their divine conches. Sri Krishna blew the conch named Panchajanya, and Arjuna blew that called Devadatta. The mighty Bhima blew the huge conch Paundra. Yudhishthira, the king, the son of Kunti, blew the conch Ananta Vijaya. Nakula and Sahadeva blew their conches as well. Then the king of Kashi, the leading bowman, the great warrior Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the invincible Satyaki, Drupada, all the sons of Draupadi, and the strong-armed sons of Subhadra joined in. And the noise tore through the heart of Duryodhana's army. Indeed, the sound was tumultuous, echoing throughout heaven and earth. Then, O Dhritarashtra, lord of the earth, having seen your son's forces set in their places, and the fighting about to begin, Arjuna spoke these words to Sri Krishna. Arjuna, O Krishna, drive my chariot between the two armies. I want to see those who desire to fight with me. With whom will this battle be fought? I want to see those assembled to fight for Duryodhana, those who seek to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra by engaging in war. Sanjaya, thus Arjuna spoke, and Sri Krishna, driving his splendid chariot between the two armies, facing Bhishma and Drona and all the kings of the earth, said, Arjuna, behold, all the Kurus gathered together. And Arjuna, standing between the two armies, saw fathers and grandfathers, teachers, uncles and brothers, sons and grandsons, in-laws and friends. Seeing his kinsmen established in opposition, Arjuna was overcome by sorrow. Despairing, he spoke these words. Arjuna, O Krishna, I see my own relations here anxious to fight, and my limbs grow weak. My mouth is dry, my body shakes, and my hair is standing on end. My skin burns, and the bow Gandiva has slipped from my hand. I am unable to stand. My mind seems to be whirling. These signs bode evil for us. I do not see any good can come from killing our relations in battle. O Krishna, I have no desire for victory, or for a kingdom, or pleasures. Of what use is a kingdom, or pleasure, or even life, if those for whose sake we desire these things, teachers, fathers, sons, grandfathers, uncles, in-laws, grandsons, and others with family ties, are engaging in this battle, renouncing their wealth and their lives? Even if they were to kill me, I would not want to kill them, not even to become ruler of the three worlds, how much less for the earth alone. O Krishna, what satisfaction could we find in killing Dhritarashtra's sons? We would become sinners by slaying these men, even though they are evil. The sons of Dhritarashtra are related to us, therefore we should not kill them. How can we gain happiness by killing members of our own family? Though they are overpowered by greed, and see no evil in destroying families or injuring friends, we see these evils. Why shouldn't we turn away from this sin? When a family declines, ancient traditions are destroyed. With them are lost the spiritual foundations for life, and the family loses its sense of unity. Where there is no sense of unity, the women of the family become corrupt, and with the corruption of its women, society is plunged into chaos. Social chaos is hell for the family and for those who have destroyed the family as well. It disrupts the process of spiritual evolution begun by our ancestors. The timeless spiritual foundations of family and society would be destroyed by these terrible deeds which violate the unity of life. It is said that those whose family dharma has been destroyed dwell in hell. This is a great sin. We are prepared to kill our own relations out of greed for the pleasures of a kingdom. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to attack me in battle and kill me unarmed and unresisting.
Sanjaya.
Overwhelmed by sorrow, Arjuna spoke these words, and casting away his bow and his arrows, he sat down in his chariot in the middle of the battlefield.
Chapter 2. Self-Realization. Sanjaya.
These are the words that Sri Krishna spoke to the despairing Arjuna, whose eyes were burning with tears of pity and confusion.
Krishna. This despair and weakness in a time of crisis are mean and unworthy of you, Arjuna. How have you fallen into a state so far from the path to liberation? It does not become you to yield to this weakness. Arise with a brave heart and destroy the enemy.
Arjuna, how can I ever bring myself to fight against Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of reverence?
How can I, Krishna? Surely it would be better to spend my life begging than to kill these great and worthy souls. If I killed them, every pleasure I found would be tainted. I don't even know which would be better, for us to conquer them or for them to conquer us.
The sons of Dhritarashtra have confronted us.
But why would we care to live if we killed them?
My will is paralyzed, and I am utterly confused. Tell me which is the better path for me. Let me be your disciple. I have fallen at your feet. Give me instruction. What can overcome a sorrow that saps all my vitality? Even power over men and gods or the wealth of an empire seem empty.
Sanjaya,
this is how Arjuna, the great warrior, spoke to Sri Krishna. With the words, O Krishna, I will not fight. He fell silent. As they stood between the two armies, Sri Krishna smiled and replied to Arjuna, who had sunk into despair.
Krishna, you speak sincerely, but your sorrow has no cause. The wise grieve neither for the living nor the dead. There has never been a time when you
and I, and the kings gathered here, have not existed. Nor will there be a time when we will cease to exist. As the same person inhabits the body through childhood, youth, and old age, so too at the time of death he attains another body. The wise are not deluded by these changes. When the senses contact sense objects, a person experiences cold or heat, pleasure or pain. These experiences are fleeting. They come and go. Bear them patiently, Arjuna. Those who are unaffected by these changes, who are the same in pleasure and pain, are truly wise and fit for immortality. Assert your strength and realize this. The impermanent has no reality. Reality lies in the eternal. Those who have seen the boundary between these two have attained the end of all knowledge. Realize that which pervades the universe and is indestructible. No power can affect this unchanging, imperishable reality. The body is mortal, but that which dwells in the body is immortal and immeasurable. Therefore, Arjuna, fight in this battle. One believes he is the slayer. Another believes he is the slain. Both are ignorant. There is neither slayer nor slain. You were never born. You will never die. You have never changed. You can never change. Unborn, eternal, immutable, immemorial. You do not die when the body dies. Realizing that which is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and unchanging, how can you slay or cause another to slay? As one abandons worn-out clothes and acquires new ones, so when the body is worn out, a new one is acquired by the self who lives within. The self cannot be pierced by weapons or burned by fire. Water cannot wet it, nor can the wind dry it. The self cannot be pierced or burned, made wet or dry. It is everlasting and infinite, standing on the motionless foundations of eternity. The self is unmanifested, beyond all thought, beyond all change. Knowing this, you should not grieve. O mighty Arjuna, even if you believe the self to be subject to birth and death, you should not grieve. Death is inevitable for the living. Birth is inevitable for the dead. Since these are unavoidable, you should not sorrow. Every creature is unmanifested at first and then attains manifestation. When its end has come, it once again becomes unmanifested. What is there to lament in this? The glory of the self is beheld by a few, and a few describe it. A few listen, but many without understanding. The self of all beings living within the body is eternal and cannot be harmed. Therefore, do not grieve. Considering your dharma, you should not vacillate. For a warrior, nothing is higher than a war against evil. The warrior confronted with such a war should be pleased, Arjuna, for it comes as an open gate to heaven. But if you do not participate in this battle against evil, you will incur sin, violating your dharma and your honor. The story of your dishonor will be repeated endlessly, and for a man of honor, dishonor is worse than death. These brave warriors will think you have withdrawn from battle out of fear, and those who formerly esteemed you will treat you with disrespect. Your enemies will ridicule your strength and say things that should not be said. What could be more painful than this? Death means the attainment of heaven. Victory means the enjoyment of the earth. Therefore rise up, Arjuna, resolved to fight.
Having made yourself alike in pain and pleasure, profit and loss, victory and defeat,
engage in this great battle and you will be freed from sin.
You have heard the intellectual explanation of Sankhya, Arjuna. Now listen to the principles of yoga. By practicing these, you can break through the bonds of karma. On this path, effort never goes to waste, and there is no failure. Even a little effort towards spiritual awareness will protect you from the greatest fear. Those who follow this path, resolving deep within themselves to seek me alone, attain singleness of purpose. For those who lack resolution, the decisions of life are many-branched and endless. There are ignorant people who speak flowery words and take delight in the letter of the law, saying that there is nothing else. Their hearts are full of selfish desires, Arjuna. Their idea of heaven is their own enjoyment, and the aim of all their activities is pleasure and power. The fruit of their actions is continual rebirth. Those whose minds are swept away by the pursuit of pleasure and power are incapable of following the supreme goal and will not attain samadhi. The scriptures describe the three gunas, but you should be free from the action of the gunas, established in eternal truth, self-controlled, without any sense of duality or the desire to acquire and hoard. Just as a reservoir is of little use when the whole countryside is flooded, scriptures are of little use to the illumined man or woman who sees the Lord everywhere. You have the right to work, but never to the fruit of work. You should never engage in action for the sake of reward, nor should you long for inaction. Perform work in this world, Arjuna, as a man established within himself, without selfish attachments, and alike in success and defeat. For yoga is perfect evenness of mind. Seek refuge in the attitude of detachment, and you will amass the wealth of spiritual awareness. Those who are motivated only by desire for the fruits of action are miserable, for they are constantly anxious about the results of what they do. When consciousness is unified, however, all vain anxiety is left behind. There is no cause for worry, whether things go well or ill. Therefore, devote yourself to the disciplines of yoga, for yoga is skill in action. The wise unify their consciousness and abandon attachment to the fruits of action, which binds a person to continual rebirth. Thus, they attain a state beyond all evil. When your mind has overcome the confusion of duality, you will attain the state of holy indifference to things you hear and things you have heard. When you are unmoved by the confusion of ideas, and your mind is completely united in deep samadhi, you will attain the state of perfect yoga. Arjuna, tell me of those who live established in wisdom, ever aware of the self, O Krishna. How do they talk? How sit? How move about? Krishna, they live in wisdom who see themselves in all and all in them, who have renounced every selfish desire and sense craving tormenting the heart. Neither agitated by grief nor hankering after pleasure, they live free from lust and fear and anger. Established in meditation, they are truly wise. Fettered no more by selfish attachments, they are neither elated by good fortune nor depressed by bad.
Such are the seers.
Even as a tortoise draws in its limbs, the wise can draw in their senses at will. Aspirants abstain from sense pleasures, but they still crave for them. These cravings all disappear when they see the highest goal. Even of those who tread the path, the stormy senses can sweep off the mind. They live in wisdom who subdue their senses and keep their minds ever absorbed in me. When you keep thinking about sense objects, attachment comes. Attachment breeds desire, the lust of possession, which burns to anger. Anger clouds the judgment. You can no longer learn from past mistakes. Lost is the power to choose between what is wise and what is unwise, and your life is utter waste. But when you move amidst the world of sense, free from attachment and aversion alike, there comes the peace in which all sorrows end, and you live in the wisdom of the self. The disunited mind is far from wise. How can it meditate? How be at peace? When you know no peace, how can you know joy? When you let your mind follow the call of the senses, they carry away your better judgment, as storms drive a boat off its charted course on the sea. Use all your power to free the senses from attachment and aversion alike, and live in the full wisdom of the self. Such a sage awakes to light in the night of all creatures. That which the world calls day is the night of ignorance to the wise. As rivers flow into the ocean, but cannot make the vast ocean overflow, so flow the streams of the sense world into the sea of peace that is the sage. But this is not so with the desirer of desires. They are forever free who renounce all selfish desires and break away from the ego cage of I, me, and mine, to be united with the Lord. This is the supreme state. Attain to this and pass from death to immortality.
Chapter 3. Selfless Service. Arjuna.
O Krishna, you have said that knowledge is greater than action. Why then do you ask me to wage this terrible war? Your advice seems inconsistent. Give me one path to follow to the supreme good.
Krishna. At the beginning of time, I declared two paths for the pure of heart. Jnana Yoga, the contemplative path of spiritual wisdom, and Karma Yoga, the active path of selfless service. One who shirks action does not attain freedom. No one can gain perfection by abstaining from work. Indeed, there is no one who rests for even an instant. All creatures are driven to action by their own nature. Those who abstain from action, while allowing the mind to dwell on sensual pleasure, cannot be called sincere spiritual aspirants. But they excel who control their senses through the mind, using them for selfless service. Fulfill all your duties. Action is better than inaction. Even to maintain your body, Arjuna, you are obliged to act. Selfish action imprisons the world. Act selflessly, without any thought of personal profit. At the beginning, mankind and the obligation of selfless service were created together.
Through selfless service, you will always be fruitful and find the fulfillment of your desires. This is the promise of the Creator. Honor and cherish the Devas as they honor and cherish you. Through this honor and love, you will attain the supreme good. All human desires are fulfilled by the Devas, who are pleased by selfless service. But anyone who enjoys the things given by the Devas without offering selfless acts in return is a thief. The spiritually minded who eat in the spirit of service are freed from all their sins, but the selfish who prepare food for their own satisfaction eat sin. Living creatures are nourished by food, and food is nourished by rain. Rain itself is the water of life, which comes from selfless worship and service. Every selfless act, Arjuna, is born from Brahman, the eternal, infinite Godhead. Brahman is present in every act of service. All life turns on this law, O Arjuna. Those who violate it, indulging the senses for their own pleasure and ignoring the needs of others, have wasted their life. But those who realize the self are always satisfied. Having found the source of joy and fulfillment, they no longer seek happiness from the external world. They have nothing to gain or lose by any action. Neither people nor things can affect their security. Strive constantly to serve the welfare of the world. By devotion to selfless work, one attains the supreme goal of life. Do your work with the welfare of others always in mind. It was by such work that Janaka attained perfection. Others too have followed this path. What the outstanding person does, others will try to do. The standards such people create will be followed by the whole world. There is nothing in the three worlds for me to gain, Arjuna, nor is there anything I do not have. I continue to act, but I am not driven by any need of my own. If I ever refrained from continuous work, everyone would immediately follow my example. If I stopped working, I would be the cause of cosmic chaos, and finally of the destruction of this world and these people. The ignorant work for their own profit, Arjuna. The wise work for the welfare of the world, without thought for themselves. By abstaining from work, you will confuse the ignorant who are engrossed in their own actions. Perform all work carefully, guided by compassion. All actions are performed by the gunas of Prakriti. Deluded by identification with the ego, a person thinks, I am the doer. But the illumined man or woman understands the domain of the gunas and is not attached. Such people know that the gunas interact with each other. They do not claim to be the doer. Those who are deluded by the operation of the gunas become attached to the results of their action. Those who understand these truths should not unsettle the ignorant. Performing all actions for my sake, completely absorbed in the self, and without expectations, fight. But stay free from the fever of the ego. Those who live in accordance with these divine laws, without complaining, firmly established in faith, are released from karma. Those who violate these laws, criticizing and complaining, are utterly deluded and are the cause of their own suffering. Even the wise act within the limitations of their own nature. Every creature is subject to Prakriti. What is the use of repression? The senses have been conditioned by attraction to the pleasant and aversion to the unpleasant. Do not be ruled by them. They are obstacles in your path. It is better to strive in one's own dharma than to succeed in the dharma of another. Nothing is ever lost in following one's own dharma, but competition in another's dharma breeds fear and insecurity. Arjuna, what is the force that binds us to selfish deeds, O Krishna? What power moves us, even against our will, as if forcing us? Krishna, it is selfish desire and anger, arising from the guna of rajas. These are the appetites and evils which threaten a person in this life. Just as a fire is covered by smoke, and a mirror is obscured by dust, just as the embryo rests deep within the womb, knowledge is hidden by selfish desire. Hidden, Arjuna, by this unquenchable fire for self-satisfaction, the inveterate enemy of the wise. Selfish desire is found in the senses, mind, and intellect, misleading them and burying the understanding in delusion. Fight with all your strength, Arjuna. Controlling your senses, conquer your enemy, the destroyer of knowledge and realization. The senses are higher than the body, the mind higher than the senses. Above the mind is the intellect, and above the intellect is the Atman. Thus, knowing that which is supreme, let the Atman rule the ego. Use your mighty arms to slay the fierce enemy that is selfish desire.